going on. It's a fool thing.
News Radio 1000, KTOK, Gwen Falk and her Lippert, 25 degrees in Oklahoma City. This half hour, we're going to be talking to a public servant, and I can say that with all respect because Representative Rebecca Hamilton joins me. Now, she has served in our legislature for 18 years, and in a 20-minute interview, how could we possibly talk about everything she has done? But when it comes to human rights and all of the social justice advocacy things that have happened at the state legislature, certainly her name, Representative Rebecca Hamilton, is leading all of the major issues. So, Representative Hamilton, thank you so much. And may I publicly thank you for your years of service. What an interesting track record you have in that you served 18 years, but they were in different time periods, in different statuses of our state legislature, and yet you were able to accomplish so much. Thank you for joining me on this Sunday night.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Tell me about how you approached being a public servant who was interested in human rights and social justice.
I think the most important thing you have to have when you go into office is a very clear understanding of yourself and what you believe. Because when you're in office, you get really bashed around by a lot of people who want to either persuade you or flatter you or bully you, whatever it takes for them to accomplish it, into doing what they think that you should do with the power that the people have given you. And when you're in public office, it's a trust. It is a trust that the people give you. They entrust you to be their voice in government. And it's really not about you. It's never about you. It's always about them, and it's about the office itself. And if you don't walk into this with a really clear understanding of the fact that, one, it's not about you, it's about the office, and two, it's not about all the special interests and all the other things that are going to be coming at you when you're in there. It's about doing something that really helps the people who elected you and that it helps the people of this state and people in general. You can lose yourself. Being in office can really mess with your mind, and you can actually lose yourself. And I saw it all the time. It happened more often than not.
And after you found yourself in this situation, how did you respond? What brought you out of it?
Well, I loved the people that I represented. And I was very, very aware of the fact that they needed me. I represented a district which had the lowest educational level, the lowest income level, the highest number of ex-offenders, the highest number of illegal immigrants in the entire state. They needed me. They needed a representative. Someone who was there from some of the more wealthier areas, they were representing people who could hire their own lobbyists if they needed to. They weren't as dependent on them. They could hire lawyers. They could hire lobbyists. They could find ways of making their voice heard without their representative.
So let me.
People I represented had to have me. They were totally dependent on me.
And so, looking at your accomplishments from, I believe, your blog, it mentions that you authored the original VPO, Victims Protective Order, to protect battered women. You got the funding for the first statewide program for adult daycare and the first statewide program of domestic violence shelters. And I mean, the things that are listed on this are just phenomenal. Passed the bill to outlaw elective abortions in state-funded hospitals, had passed pro-life bills requiring informed consent, parental notification, and limiting forced abortions, things for seniors and all that. And I heard you describe your constituency, but how do you describe them? I mean, I heard what you said, but if you were going to, now that I've mentioned these specifics, how would you describe them?
How would I describe my constituents? To be honest with you, I think they're some of the smartest and most perceptive people that I've ever known, and the best. They never failed to see through things. When people would try to manipulate them, they would always see right through it. And they were, I couldn't have done the things that I did in office if they hadn't backed me up. I never had to go out there and be afraid of my district. And a lot of the people who hold elective office are afraid of their district. And they spend a lot of time trying to keep their districts from really knowing them. They pretend to be something other than they are with the people who elect them, and then they spend their whole time in office hiding from who they really are and hiding it from their district. I never had to do that. And they supported me. There were lots of times when people tried to attack me through the district for doing things they didn't like, some of the things you named. And the district stood with me. And so I wasn't afraid of them, and I feel sorry for people who are elected to office who are afraid of their constituents. That's a horrible way to live.
One of the six original co-founders of the first Rape Crisis Center in Oklahoma, is it that other people at the Capitol just didn't know about it, didn't think about it, wasn't on their radar, or it was not a priority?
I did that actually before I was in office. That was a group of women and I who just got together and did it, which is really, that's how you get things done. You just do it. And I think that what I experienced the whole time I was in office, it didn't matter which party was in control, it didn't matter which decade I was in, is an indifference to what the violence against women and an indifference to women's suffering in areas like that. That was pretty much the way it always stayed. There were a number of bills that I tried to pass and that I couldn't, that the reason why was just because of that. I think one example, it took me 5 years to pass a bill saying that it's making it a felony to beat up a pregnant woman. Now, why would it take 5 years to do that?
And what did your colleagues at the legislature, when they voted it down, did they just say, oh, we don't really need that?
Well, they never voted against it in a stand-up vote because that would be politically stupid. What they would do is kill it in committees and different things like that. And what happens with legislation like that is that they don't tell you, we think it's okay for men to beat up pregnant women. They don't even really think that themselves. What they think is that it's not important. And so they would always tell you, well, there's this priority or that priority. 1 year it got killed because they said it would cost too much money to put these people in jail. And why do we build prisons if not for people like that? But that shows right there the level of it's just not important. It doesn't happen to me, so it's not important. And you really have to be determined to override that kind of thing. You've got to work very hard.
With all of these accomplishments, and really, I read a statement that you made about preserving life. Do you remember the statement you made to Mike Ray?
I don't remember the precise words I used, but I can tell you what I think and what I thought the whole time I was in office. And that is that if there's something I can do that's going to save someone's life, I'm going to do it. If there's something I can do that will save human lives, that will benefit the dignity and the sanctity of human life, then I will do it. And I don't care what the cost to me is. And that's really part of the secret. You have to not care if you're going to have people who will be angry with you if you do this. You've got to be willing to accept quite a bit of abuse. And if you can get past that and not care about whether or not someone abuses you, you just think this is right, this is what I should be doing, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm just going to let the chips fall, you'd be surprised what you can get done.
So what is left? I'm sure there are many things that you would wish you were still going to be there to stand up to him and say, look at this, why are we not doing that? What's left that you didn't get accomplished?
Well, there are a lot of things. First of all, I don't want to go back. I am really glad. I feel like someone let me out of jail. One of the things I've been dealing with is trying to adapt to how much freedom I suddenly have, and the lack of responsibility. I think that there are several things that I wish that I had been able to accomplish that I didn't. But primarily, I would like to take money out of the consideration of whether or not women submit to egg harvesting and surrogacy. I don't think you should be able to buy women's bodies. I know that the medical profession, the doctors, not the entire medical profession, but some of the doctors who do this, are lying to these women about the dangers. And they run ads. I don't know if you're aware of what happens, but they run ads on college campuses, on Facebook, and places where young girls go a lot, and offer them large sums of money to allow their bodies to be harvested, to allow their eggs to be harvested. And what they don't tell them is that they're going to inject them with massive doses of hormones, and they're going to subject them to unnecessary surgery. They're going to make them very sick, and that the side effects can range, beginning with death as the worst, and going through infertility, hemorrhaging, all sorts of damaging things, including very long-term damage to their bodies. And they just kind of leave that out. But just stop and think for a moment. A woman produces one egg a month, and you know there are a lot of jokes about how the hormones involved in that affect us. Think about a woman who's producing 50 eggs. That they rev her up, her body up, to the point, inject her with such massive doses of hormones that she's producing 50 eggs, and then they surgically remove the eggs, scarring the ovary, putting her through all of this. That is really dangerous. And using money to induce women to do that is, it's a form of medical malpractice.
I do want to ask you, because I think you and I both have a heart for this, about what is happening to our senior citizens. And of course, I'm probably not that far away from becoming one, but seniors. And, you know, we baby boomers want to get this solved before we get there. The abuse and the mistreatment of seniors, even veterans. What do you think we need to be doing, and tell us about what you've already done and what you plan to do, help us do next?
I think one of the things I'm most proud of is that I mothered the adult daycare system in Oklahoma. And I would really love to see that expanded, because it is something that it saves lives and it increases quality of life for the older person as well as for the people who are taking care of them. What adult daycare does is it provides a place where you can take your elderly relative, or if someone's disabled, sometimes they can be there. My mother is in adult daycare right now, and she has some friends who are in there because they're mentally challenged rather than because they're elderly. But what adult daycare does is it provides a place, it's literally daycare for adults. And they have activities, they do exercises, they have fun, they have great friends. It gives them dignity. It actually helps them to maintain their health and their vigor, because they all, as I said, they do exercises, they get regular meals there. And it gives the person who is the caretaker at home, the family member, the option of being able to continue to work. And even if they're not working, they have the opportunity to have some hours away from constant caretaking. Because caring for an older person, especially someone with dementia, is a draining thing.
It just makes, you're right, it makes you so weary, doesn't it?
Well, it's hard, but it's wonderful, too. I'm doing it, and it certainly is wonderful to be able to care for your parents that way. My mother is so precious, and I feel very privileged to have her and to be able to care for her. But adult daycare enhances her quality of life and my quality of life. It keeps her out of a nursing home, and it allowed me to go ahead and be in the legislature. And at the same time, it costs a lot less than a nursing home. It costs far less than a nursing home for both the state and the individual.
Does she enjoy it?
Excuse me?
Does she enjoy it?
Oh, yes. She calls it her job.
Oh, that's good.
And she looks forward to it every day. And, in fact, I was talking to her a couple of weeks ago, and I said, you know, it's been about 30 years since you retired. And she turned around and looked at me, and she says, I'll have you know I go to work every day. And I said, yes, ma'am. You certainly do. But it's just a wonderful program. And I don't know why the state doesn't put more money into it, because it would enable a lot of people to stay home. It would save a lot of people who are children of older parents from having to make this agonizing, terrible, terrible decision of putting someone in a nursing home. And it would, I can't tell you how much it increases their quality of life. And it actually prolongs their lives. It's a win-win-win-win-win. And I'm really incredibly blessed that I was able to do something like start a program like that. And I really hope that it expands in the future. It's an incredibly good program.
I understand you maintain a blog and you're writing two books, one on the effect of abortion on America's feminist movement. Are you close to completing that?
I've got about halfway through. I have it completely outlined, and I'm working on it. And I don't know. I'm halfway through to the first draft. Let's put it that way. And I have, when I get to the first draft, then I've got to go through and rework it, because I do. When I'm writing, I have a really big habit of just putting an asterisk there and saying, "Look this up later." So I have quite a bit of that stuff to do.
What advice do you offer to the new young Democrats that are coming up through the ranks? We have about a minute left.
Would you repeat that? I didn't hear your question.
What advice would you offer to the new young Democrat women that are seeking public office?
Well, first of all, I hope a lot of women in both parties seek public office, because I think women are absolutely essential to good government, that we have women out there. And secondly, my advice to anyone seeking public office, women or otherwise, is to do what is right for your district and to do what is right for the people of this state, and to not be afraid. Don't ever let that place scare you. And I think personally that a just and stable government is always the greater good. That was the moderating way that I looked at every decision that I made. A just and stable government is the great essential good.
Representative Rebecca Hamilton, we are out of time, but thank you so much for your service. I appreciate it.
I am very pleased to be on here. Thank you.
Thank you.